Okay, 4 o'clock, we'll call this meeting of the Story County Board of Adjustment to order. Roll call vote.
McGill.
Here.
Youngberg.
Here.
Brecky.
Here.
Scarlett. Absent. Bruns. Absent.
Thank you. In front of you, you've got the agenda for today's meeting. Board, any changes or adjustments to the agenda? If not, we'll leave it as it is presented. You also have in front of you the minutes of the previous meeting that we had on 6/21, as well as we have minutes for the closed session that was we were called into. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Motion and second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Motion carries. Just a couple of things before we start in on today's business. First off, if you intend to say anything, if you could, please sign in as you come into the meeting. Make sure you signed into the log. The other thing, if you want to address the board when we get to that point, please state your name and address so that we've got that for our records. Generally, the way we're going to run the meeting is that we'll have any comments on any items that are not on the agenda today from the public. We're willing to listen to those. And after that, then we'll move into the business that we have at hand. So on that note, I will open it up. And, oh, one other thing, just FYI, since there's only 3 of us here today, we have to be unanimous to pass any actions that the board takes. And so that has to be accounted for. And one other comment, just keep in mind we're here to we're not here to interpret the zoning ordinances or the law itself. We're just here to make sure that it's all met according to what we feel is the case. On that note, any public comments on anything that's come before the board, with the exception of those that we have on the agenda in front of us? Hearing none, we'll move on, and the first thing we have here is discussion of CUP 07-17, Wanda Camp, Adaptive Reuse of Shipley Schoolhouse.
Okay, thanks so much. So like you said, this is CUP 07-17, the Adaptive Reuse of the Shipley Schoolhouse. Haley, our intern, will be going through the first part of the presentation, the background section, and then I'll be going through the standards of approval. I really briefly wanted to go over again what a conditional use permit is and the kind of the process of that. So this is a statement from the conditional use permit chapter in the Story County Land Development Regulations. It says that many land use activities, while not inherently inconsistent with other permitted uses in a particular district, may have significant impacts on the surrounding area. Conditional use permits for such uses allow special conditions to be attached to the development to address those impacts. We have several of those on the case today. And the objective of the conditional use permit process is to encourage compatibility of the proposed development with the environment and with existing and future land uses in the area. So just keeping in mind what the intent of a conditional use permit is. We'll get started in the background with Haley.
All right, so the nature of the request, again, it is for the adaptive reuse of the Shipley Schoolhouse as a multifamily dwelling with rental units. The school was built in 1916, and since 2000 has been owned and used as a residence by the applicant. 14 units will be available to rent. 7 are located on the first floor to be rented out this August, and 7 are located on the second floor to be rented out the following school year. And there is a shared kitchen and bathroom facilities. It is recommended to allow a maximum of 14 tenants as a condition, and the applicant has indicated that the intended renters are graduate students. So the Planning and Zoning Commission did make a recommendation at their July 5th meeting, and they recommended approval of the conditional use permit with conditions, and those conditions are as follows. 1, the conditional use permit shall remain in effect as long as Wanda Camp is a permanent resident and the owner of the property. 2, the Nevada Fire Department shall inspect the property annually, and the applicant shall make improvements as required by the Nevada Fire Department. 3, all scrap, appliances, tires, and other items of this nature shall be removed prior to occupancy. 4, gravel shall be added to the north parking area to meet the Story County Land Development Regulations, Section 88.08, that all parking spaces and circulation routes are well defined and clearly marked. On condition 5, and I'd like to note that this condition has been met, that condition being that the development shall incorporate best management practices as outlined in the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual, Section 2D-1, General Information for Best Management Practices as amended, and erosion and sediment control practices that meet or exceed the Iowa Statewide Urban Design and Specifications Guidelines. The applicant shall submit a statement that these requirements are met prior to occupancy. Condition 6, a maximum of 14 tenants shall be permitted. Condition 7, the following item shall be addressed and another building review conducted by the Nevada Fire Department shall occur to confirm the following requirements are met prior to occupancy. And those items, are, the full list of those items are in the staff report, which was provided on the desk. Condition 8, the fire escape shall be inspected and improved as necessary for its use prior to occupancy. 9, an inspection of the second floor shall be conducted by the Nevada Fire Department upon completion and prior to its occupancy. 10, alternative compliance to allow parking in the Center Street right-of-way to the south of the school is supported with the following conditions. The applicant shall assume all maintenance duties of the south parking area in the Center Street right-of-way, including adding gravel and removing snow, and shall release the county from those duties. The parking area in the Center Street right-of-way shall be reserved for tenants and limited to 16 spaces. A sign shall be posted limiting the use of the spaces to tenants. If traffic does increase in the future on Center Street to the point at which the parking is impeding traffic flow and is no longer safe, as determined by the Story County Engineer, all parking at that point shall be provided on-site. The completion of the on-site parking must occur within 6 months after notice is given by the Planning and Development Department. Condition 11, if a public accommodation is established, the applicant shall take the appropriate steps to determine the building is in compliance by contacting a proper authority or expert on the American Disabilities Act, such as the U.S. Access Board. And finally, 12, the applicant shall take the appropriate steps to determine if reasonable modification and accommodation requirements of the Fair Housing Act are met or are required to be met by contacting an expert or proper authority, such as the Iowa Civil Rights Commission. And here is a vicinity map. Again, the property is located in Grant Township, about 2.25 miles southeast of Ames and about 2.25 miles southwest of Nevada. Here is an aerial image of the site. To the west, you can see 595th Avenue, and to the south of the school is Center Street. As far as the zoning and surrounding land use, the properties to the west, north, and east are all zoned A1 agricultural. The two adjacent properties to the south are both zoned R1 residential. And Juan de Camp does own this property here. There are a few properties in the southeast corner of Tripoli that are zoned commercial light industrial. There is Union Pacific Railroad that runs along a southern border of Tripoli. There are 6 single-family dwellings within Tripoli, excluding the Tripoli School, and those are located to the east of the property here and also to the southwest of the property here. So the county does have a comprehensive plan, the Cornerstone to Capstone Plan, referred to as the C2C. And under this plan, there are future land use designations. The future land use map shows that most of the parcels in Shipley are designated as rural residential and are contained, or that Shipley itself is contained in a rural village area. So here is a site plan that was provided by the applicant. The original building here was built in 1916, and the eastern addition added in 1938. The east addition houses the shared kitchen facility. On the west portion here houses the rental units. And there are proposed 25 total parking spaces. 16 of those are in the Center Street right-of-way, one of them being an ADA space located here so that it has immediate access to a ramp leading to the entrance to the building. There are two other ADA spaces to the north here, as well as seven other spaces to the north of the eastern addition. There are proposed landscaping to be put into the north of the northern parking area here, as well as along the western property line here. As you can see, there are also two accesses, one along 595th Avenue, as well as one off of Center Street, that allow for the drive to be one way. So here we have a lower level interior plan that was provided by the applicant. The area shaded in green represents the tenant common area. The area shaded in blue represents the applicant's private living quarters. The common areas in green include a living area, two bathrooms, a dining area, and a kitchen. The applicant's private living quarters include open area, bedrooms, a bathroom, office spaces, as well as storage spaces. Here is a first floor interior plan provided by the applicant. The area shaded in green represent tenant common areas, and the area shaded in brown represent the individual dwelling units, private dwelling units of the tenants. And so as you can see on the first floor, there are units 1 through 7. You'll notice units 3 through 6 are two rooms that are adjoined through a doorway for one unit. There is also in the green two shared restrooms and a kitchenette, an open lounge area, as well as a study or conference room. The second floor interior plan, again in the brown, is the private tenant living areas, units 8 through 14. The green is the shared tenant areas. Again, there's two restrooms, a kitchenette, two showers, an open lounge area. And the applicant does have a private storage room that will be inaccessible to renters on this floor as well. So parking for the property. The property does have two proposed parking areas, one of them being to the north of the school, and the other one being the south parking area that's located in the Center Street right-of-way. Again, there are the two accesses, one off 595th Avenue and one off Center Street, that allow for a one-way gravel drive. And the only new site development is the regraveling of the north parking area. And again, that's 9 spaces total, with 2 of them being ADA spaces. The south parking area is located in the Center Street right-of-way, and again has 16 spaces total, with 1 of them being ADA. And to allow for parking in the right-of-way, the applicant is asking for alternative compliance. Again, the engineer will permit parking in the Center Street right-of-way if it meets the county's land development regulations. The alternative compliance provision in the land development regulations allows applicants to submit plans that do not meet requirements if they equally or better accomplish the ordinance's purpose. They also provide review criteria to determine if this purpose is met. The request meets the alternative compliance review criteria, but the alternative proposed does not detract from the continuity, connectivity, and convenient proximity for pedestrians between or among existing or future uses in the vicinity. So the entrance to the building is located on the south side of the building along a sidewalk and a ramp to access the entrance. The right-of-way is 60 feet wide, and there is a low traffic volume on Center Street. Several additional conditions are recommended in relation to the alternative compliance. We ask that a tenant parking only sign be posted in the parking area to ensure that it doesn't become a public parking space. That the parking be limited to 16 spaces. And if traffic increases to create unsafe conditions, at that point, all parking shall be located on site. And just a few fire code items. As the Nevada Fire Chief has been a part of the review process. In previous conditional use permits for the property, the Nevada Fire Chief's involvement was listed as a condition. planning staff conducted a building and site visit with the Nevada Fire Chief to ensure that the health, safety, and general welfare of the persons residing in the building will be adequately safeguarded and the standards of approval for the conditional use permit met. After the building and site visit, the Nevada Fire Chief provided a list of fire code improvements that the applicant will need to address before the property can be occupied. These improvements are recommended as conditions of the conditional use permit. So in terms of accessibility, the ADA applies only to places of public accommodation, but if a leasing or rental office were on site, it could be considered a public accommodation, and at that point ADA provisions may apply. The Fair Housing Act design and construction provisions for accessibility apply only to new residential construction, but the reasonable modification and accommodation provisions still apply here. Story County does not have a building code and does not enforce ADA or Fair Housing Act provisions. Staff recommends two conditions of approval to ensure the applicant takes appropriate steps and is in compliance with these regulations. And so like I had mentioned before, there have been previous conditional use permits for the property. In 2002, the camps received a CUP to allow for the adaptive reuse of the Shipley School for a multifamily dwelling with rental units with conditions. Some of those conditions included septic system maintenance, on-site parking, an annual inspection by the Nevada Fire Department, junk or salvage yard cleanup. The camps did not meet the compliance schedule for cleanup of the junk or salvage yard and other conditions and withdrew the request in 2004. During this time period, four tenants occupied the school. In 2011, the camps received an additional CUP to allow for the adaptive reuse of the Shipley School as a retreat center with conditions. Some of those conditions included septic system maintenance, no parking overnight in the right-of-way, an annual inspection by the Nevada Fire Department, and junk or salvage yard cleanup. This use has since ceased. The permit has expired. So here I have just a few pictures of the property. Here is looking north at the school from the Center Street right-of-way, our southern parking area. Here is looking northeast at the property. Here is looking northeast at the residential property to the east. Here is looking southwest onto Center Street, the Center Street right-of-way or southern parking area. Here is looking south towards the property that is also owned by Wanda Camp. This is looking south towards the western tree line.
I'm sorry, it looks like we're having a malfunction. But this was supposed to show looking north. There's a garden area. And related to one of the conditions, you can kind of see. Can I borrow the pointer, Haley? Sorry. The camps are in the process of cleaning up a few pieces of scrap and junk that were on the property. I meant to show that they were loaded onto trailers right here. I went by today to check on that. I'm sorry, I don't know what happened to our screen, and I hope it doesn't affect the rest of the presentation. So, next photo.
So here is looking west at the drive or north parking area.
Again, this is supposed to show the stove over here. Sorry.
So here is the dining area in the shared kitchen on the lower level. Here is a shared lounge area on the lower level. Shared lounge area on the first floor. A shared conference or meeting room on the first floor. This is an example of a one-room rental unit on the first floor. And here's an example of a rental unit on the first floor that adjoins two rooms as one unit. Here's the first floor bathrooms. There are two on the floor. The left photo shows the second floor shower, our second floor shower room, which is one of two on the floor. And the right shows the ground floor bathroom, which is one of two on the floor.
Okay, so moving on to the standards of approval that the board will consider. First, we have standard of compatibility. So in reviewing if this standard is met, staff felt that the adaptive reuse of the school is allowed in the A1 Agricultural District with a conditional use permit. Secondly, we have had previously granted conditional use permits for the same use as well as other uses at this site. Staff did consider that the addition of 14 dwelling units does significantly increase Shipley's population and the amount of dwelling units there. However, we did feel that since the school has really served as a defining feature of the area since the early 1900s, it would not alter the character of the area. And also a note on camp compatibility. Again, the camps have agreed to remove any junk and scrap. They are in the process of that. And again, it's a recommended condition of approval. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended that condition. Regarding transition, I wanted to note again here that there are no exterior additions being made other than that north gravel parking area and the proposed landscaping. And they're not building any new buildings here. They're reusing that existing building. There are several features in place to provide suitable transition. There's a row of trees planted along the north property line. I wish you could have seen it better in that photo. To the east, there are several evergreen trees that were planted as a buffer to that east property, and those were actually required to be planted as a condition of a previous conditional use permit. The dwelling that is located adjacent and east of the property is about 144 feet away. To the south, regarding features that provide transition, Wanda Camp does own that property to the south. It is there aren't any improvements on that property, no homes. It's just grass and a few trees. There are also trees to the west of that south parking area in the Center Street right-of-way. And there's two trees to the east of that south parking area as well. And finally, on the west side of the property, there is that proposed parking lot landscaping and a row of trees. And there's also three existing trees to the north of the parking area that provide screening along 595th Avenue. Another standard of approval is regarding traffic. We looked at traffic counts from the Iowa DOT. I'll use the pointer here. So between 260th right here and 250th, along 595th, there was a traffic count average. Daily traffic count was shown as 15 cars in 2015. This was a decrease from previous traffic counts. I also wanted to note that if tenants were going to go to Ames to campus, they might take this route up to 280th, and that has a significant amount of traffic on it. It has about 1,490 cars in average annual traffic count. So this would really have, it would represent a small increase in the amount of traffic on that road as well as Highway 30. We do have a condition related to traffic that I wanted to remind you of that the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended. And that is if traffic increases because of the school to the point at which the parking on Center Street becomes an issue, we would require that parking be moved on site. Regarding parking and loading, another standard of approval. Story County has parking maximums. So a maximum of two spaces is allowed per dwelling unit. The site plan shows 26 spaces, so that's under that maximum allowed, as well as 26 spaces total with those three ADA spaces. Applicant has requested alternative compliance to allow parking in the Center Street right-of-way. And the right-of-way, we feel, is wide enough and the traffic volume is low enough not to have any impacts with excessive parking, although there is that condition in place in case. And the alternative compliance also met one of the right view criteria in the code for alternative compliance to enhance pedestrian access. Finally, on the parking standards, we feel that the parking areas are adequately buffered. The property to the south, again, is grassland owned by Wanda Camp. There are trees buffering it, as well as the north parking area, and there's a proposed additional landscaping near the north parking area. Regarding signs and lighting, prior to the recommended condition for a tenant-only parking sign, no signs or lighting were proposed. And directional signage, if there were to be directional signage for the parking area, does not require a sign permit. Otherwise, nothing else is proposed for signs and lighting. And environmental protection, one of the main points here that I want to bring up is that the Environmental Health Department reviewed this, and the septic system indicated that the capacity was sufficient, and also recommended some maintenance tasks to ensure that it remains sufficient. The environmental protection also, we have that proposed landscaping in the parking area that is positioned to allow maximum absorption of runoff, and we have that 20% of the impervious surfaces standard in our code has to be landscaped of the new area to be developed. And so that proposed landscaping area meets the requirement of 20% of the impervious surfaces to be developed on the property. They have met the condition of submitting a statement that best management practices of the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual and SUDIS design specifications are met. And we also wanted to point out that historic preservation is generally a pretty sustainable effort in terms of reusing buildings. Moving into the analysis section, this section, if the commission concludes that the previously discussed standards of approval are met, you must also conclude that if the development is completed as proposed, it will not do the following things. So the first item is not adequately safeguard the health, safety, and general welfare of persons residing or working in adjoining or surrounding property. Again, we have the Nevada Fire Chief provide a list of fire code items after a site visit that the applicant will need to address prior to occupancy. And those are recommended by the Planning and Zoning Commission as conditions of approval. We also have recommended by the Planning and Zoning Commission conditions to meet federal accessibility requirements in case those would be required. The second is not impair or impair adequate supply of quality and quality of light and air to surrounding properties. Again, this isn't new development. Only the regraveling is new of that northern parking area, and so we don't anticipate this would occur. I also wanted to note that the setbacks for conditional uses permits, or other permitted uses as they're called, in the A1 district is 50 feet from all property lines, and this setback is met. And any future, outbuildings, those kinds of things, would also have to meet that setback. The third item is unduly increased congestion in the roads from hazard, or the hazard from fire, flood, or similar dangers. Again, we're not anticipating traffic or congestion. We went over those traffic counts, and we also have those conditions on traffic recommended by the Planning and Zoning Commission. The engineer has reviewed the two drives to the property and has no issues with their use. We're not located in the flood zone, but we do have those stormwater practices in place with the landscaping. And in regards to hazards from fire, we did have that review from the Nevada Fire Chief, as well as other conditions, including annual reviews by the fire department and inspection of the fire escapes. Another item is diminish or impair established property values on adjoining or surrounding property. We did wrap this to the assessor, and they had no comments on the impact on property values. They did mention that they would need to reassess and access the property in December to see what improvements had been made. Finally, not be in accord with the intent, purpose, and spirit of the land development regulations or cornerstone capstone plan. So for the rural residential area, this is what the future land use designation of the area is in which the subject property is located. There are several principles I wanted to go over. The first one is encourage clustering of residential sites to limit the short-term and long-term costs associated with infrastructure improvements and distribution of public services. This is located in a rural village area, Shipley.
Also, review design and development standards to ensure the conflicts between the proposed development and agriculture and natural resources are minimized. It's also, this principle also requires that new residential development maintain the open character of rural areas and protect and maintain agricultural uses and sensitive environmental features. This proposal is reusing existing buildings, so no new development will occur meeting this principle. Another principle is that when development is adjacent to agricultural uses, there are adequate buffers provided. To the north, there is an agricultural field, and there are trees between this property and that field. And finally, we have mitigate and manage stormwater runoff, soil erosion, and wastewater discharge. Again, the Story County Environmental Health Department reviewed the septic system, and they have some suggestions, but they determined it to be adequate. And there's also the parking lot landscaping to reduce stormwater runoff that is proposed. So here are some of the comments, I know we kind of already discussed these, that we received from our interagency review team, other county departments, when we routed this application to those departments. Again, Environmental Health reviewed the septic system. The engineer had comments on the south parking area. His main concern was that Story County would not be responsible for plowing snow if people were parked there. So that was recommended as a condition of approval with the alternative compliance request for parking in the Center Street right-of-way. And the assessor, again, said that he would be in contact with the camps to review changes that have been made for the property at the end of the year. Moving into comments from the public, we mailed letters to surrounding property owners within a quarter mile of the site for the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting and for this meeting. We did receive one verbal comment from an adjacent property owner to the north who supported the reuse of the school. And we received one comment that was written that I forwarded to the board that was in opposition to the proposal. That was from the owner of a property and single-family dwelling to the east, down Center Street. At the July 5th, 2017 Story County Planning and Zoning Commission, we did have several residents speak in opposition to the proposal. I've provided a summary here on this slide of their concerns, and I'll go through it quickly. There was concern about increasing traffic, increasing crime, decreasing property values, and the safety and adequacy of the building for this use as well. I think there was a concern about if the applicant did not have success in getting tenants who were students who might want to live there that weren't students. So would that be somebody that was interested in this more dormitory style of living and the quality of a tenant that might be interested in that style of living? There were also concerns about if the applicant could limit tenants to students. And so as a result of these concerns, the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended an additional condition that if one camp is not a permanent resident of the property or if the property were sold and one camp no longer the owner, the conditional use permit would expire. I wanted to note some of the other discussions and considerations the commission made in hearing these public comments. There was wondering how long the lease would be for these units. The applicant wasn't sure yet, but they weren't meant for, you know, a boarding house style short-term occupancy. The applicant did submit a list of rules for tenants that are in addition to any other requirements of a lease. The applicant did state that her husband had previously managed rental properties and would have an application process that may include background checks. Regarding safety and adequacy of the building, again, the fire chief completed the site visit and suggested improvements to be made that the Planning and Zoning Commission then recommended as conditions of approval. Finally, we had two additional citizens after the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting meet with staff and a Board of Supervisors member. And they expressed concern over the compatibility of the use and specifically the density of the use in a rural village area. So regarding compatibility, I wanted to go over the rural village area, the C2C plan principles for a rural village area.
Those principles include continue to promote improvements and reinvestments in the area, and support private efforts to seek grants and other sources of funding for the redevelopment and revitalization of these rural village areas. We feel the proposal meets these principles. It also meets public feedback from the C2C plan on the need for more affordable housing. This was something that came up in public feedback when we did our survey on the C2C plan. A large amount of respondents said that more affordable housing was needed in Ames. And one respondent specifically added a comment to their survey that high density redevelopment indicated it was a strength. I also wanted to note, in terms of compatibility, I found a Nevada Journal article on our Shipley School reunion that had some information on the number of pupils that attended. And so in 1937, it said the peak enrollment was 19. And then we also found that there had been previous commercial uses in this building. The applicant stated that there had been offices, which are being, in some cases, converted into these rooms. Some of the offices are those rooms that are being put together to make one unit. And so it seems like this is a similar density as that office use, although I will note that the hours are quite different from the previous school or commercial use. So again, moving into the recommendation from the Planning and Zoning Commission, they did recommend approval with the following conditions. I know Haley already went through these, so I'll briefly go through them again. Again, we have that condition that Wanda's a resident and owner of the property, the applicant, that the Nevada Fire and Chief inspect the property annually. Cleanup of the property is required. Gravel is required to be added to the north parking area. That stormwater management practices are incorporated. This condition has been met. Then a maximum of 14 tenants is permitted. That they address the items identified by the Nevada Fire Department prior to occupancy. That the fire escape is inspected, that when the second floor is ready to be rented, it is inspected by the Nevada Fire Department, that alternative compliance is supported with those three conditions regarding that southern parking area on tenant parking only, not becoming an impediment to traffic flow, and not requiring the county to add gravel or remove snow from that area. It's the applicant's responsibility to maintain. Finally, we have the two conditions regarding accessibility. And so that brings us to our alternatives. The Planning and Zoning Commission, again, recommended alternative two. That would be the approval with conditions. Any questions?
Board, any questions for staff?
I have several.
Yeah.
Let's see where I want to start. So there was a part of your presentation where it said that as long as the applications were not being taken on site or there was a office, that it was non-public.
So when we first reviewed the proposal,
yes.
This is a very unique proposal.
Okay.
And we do not have a building code in Story County. And so most adopted building codes would mirror standards in the Americans with Disability Act. Our only ADA standard in our code is regarding the amount of parking. So we looked into, because this is a federal law, what actually might be required.
Okay.
And so we found that ADA does not cover private residential. This is staff's interpretation, by the way. I'm not a lawyer.
Okay.
I just did some digging.
Okay.
What does cover private residential is the Fair Housing Act. And so with the ADA, however, if a public accommodation were established, so it was no longer considered, some part of the project was no longer considered private residential, for instance, if there was an office, that would need to be made accessible. Under the Fair Housing Act, this kind of adaptive reuse proposal, where originally a structure was a use other than a residential use, they do not require that Fair Housing Act design standards are in place for accessibility. However, there are two provisions called reasonable accommodations and reasonable modifications, and those require that if a tenant
was interested, who did have a request modifications to be made for the property to be made accessible, the owner would accommodate those. It might be that that potential tenant would have to pay for those modifications, but that accommodations and modifications basically would have to be honored if someone was interested that needed those.
Okay.
Does that help clarify that?
Kind of.
Okay.
Are the laws, whether they're ADA or whatever, are they more lax in an application of student housing or public housing versus low income?
That's a really good question. Again,
you're not the attorney, but I mean, are there more rules and like if the applicant calling, and I'm just saying, have they decided to make it public / student housing, or filing it strictly under the desire to do student housing versus low income housing?
So the applicant's desire and what we received in the initial application is to provide affordable housing. I don't want to call it low income or public because this is subsidized housing by any means.
Okay.
It's just based
just affordable
on
housing.
The initial rent that was proposed. I think the applicant has some comments on that as well.
Okay.
And making some more improvements to the rent that we thought it might actually change. I think they're going to address those.
But are there stricter rules for then?
I'm not sure if
affordable housing versus student housing.
I'm not sure if students are a protected class.
Okay. That's just a question I'm bringing up.
I'm not sure, honestly. But I think if a protected class did apply, then you could discriminate that against that. So, for instance, based on race or age or gender or those types of protected classes.
Okay. That picture was not visible.
Yes.
So they were supposed to have their scrap removed by July 3rd.
That was an applicant self-imposed that deadline. I mean, we haven't approved.
Okay. You didn't give them a deadline.
No.
Okay.
They just said they might have it done by then. They have taken a load already, I think, over to a scrap yard. They have the rest of it loaded up and ready to go.
Okay.
But that was a self-imposed deadline.
It's
a
separate condition also.
Yeah, and it is a condition that they have to have that removed.
Okay. Also, I note in the report that the fire alarm analysis says recommended, but then it says required, you know, that is a condition of the approval.
Yes.
Is there leeway in a tenant not having to, being able to not conform to the recommended because it doesn't say, you know, recommended versus required.
Is it on a fire chief's letter?
I think it was on the analysis at the end. My question, having been a legal secretary and a property owner also.
Which one was it?
On the analysis where the fire chief.
Okay. Is it analysis or the conditions?
Analysis,
okay.
Conditions. And it was about the fire.
Right.
The fire alarms. It says it's recommended that, you know, they update their fire alarms. But legally, that doesn't mean required. And I do know it says because of the condition to be met in order for it to happen, that sort of self-imposes required. However, the legality of that situation to me is less
absolutely, I get
dicey.
What you're saying now. Yes, thank you. So I think that is a condition. It's required. If it's required.
Okay.
Condition.
May I suggest the wording be changed?
Sure, you could amend that.
Okay.
Right. Yep. So just make sure if you want to do that, the motion would contain updated
motion.
Language.
Okay. And then also, it mentioned on the early on for the property there's an industrial area. What is it being
commercial
used?
Light industrial zoned. I believe there used to be a general store there, but if we go back to the future land use map, there is a commercial node indicated on the future land use map area that seems to have a property that has some grain bins and other ag use on there.
Okay. I just wondered what type of industrial use was.
I don't think there is. I think this is actually a house located there, or it's been a converted house. It's residential. It is still zoned that way. But on the future land use map, we do have commercial nodes indicated.
Okay. One more, sorry. Does Story County not have, for the septic, at the last part, it says in 4 years it should be pumped? Is there not a requirement to pump?
You could make that a condition if you wanted to.
And why is it 4 years versus 3 years?
How septic systems are maintained. I think that came from environmental health that looked at the diagram and the capacity and determined that this would be a good way to maintain the septic system. It was a recommendation that came out of the conceptual review and interagency review.
Okay, so if we as a board want to insert that it is a requirement of the to meet the conditions of this for approval, they would be required?
Yes, that in the discussions with Margaret, who's the environmental health director, it was discussed that protecting your mound and why do you want pump just makes financial sense. I mean, it costs a lot of money if you blow up your mound.
Right.
So that would be something to consider, that they probably don't want to
blow
up the mound, but I'm sure you could make that a condition too.
Okay. I'm just getting used to a new septic system that I've never had one before, and we are required to do it every 3 years. So that is why I am not well versed in this area, and if the county has recommendations
that was my
as a requirement versus recommendation, big difference in words.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just a couple comments as we move forward here. First off, what we'll do, we will ask for comments from the applicant. The board will question them. Then we'll ask for comments from the public. And we'll ask for any rebuttals, any final comments from the public. From the number of people that are out here and the number of opinions, I would ask that you keep your comments to 10 minutes. And at the same time, like I said, as you move to the podium, please state your name and your address. So at the end of the rebuttal, we will close it, and we'll make a decision, and we'll move forward. Based on that, is there a spokesman here for the applicant?
Brian Holland, attorney with Davis Brown of the Ames office. Our office represents the applicant. If I spend 10 minutes, I'm doing something wrong, so I'll try to be brief. I wanted to address a couple of the concerns that were raised just generally about the nature of the tenancies and who's going to be renting, so on and so forth. I met with my client post the July 5th meeting, so it's not a seamless transition. But upon my advice, my office represents very large landlords, small landlords, all sorts of folks. But the leases would be year-to-year leases. Upon my advice, they would be August 1st to July 31st. They'd be on the same schedule as 95% of the leases in Ames and all of my client leases. If someone showed up in December of 2017, for example, and said, I want to rent, but I only want to rent until February of 2018, my client would say, our leases run until the end of July. So if you want to sign up, your lease runs to the end of July. If they show up on July 30th, say, I only want to be here for a couple days, well, you need to sign a full year lease. So they're going to be year-to-year leases. They will be written leases. They will be as buttoned up as any lease you will see. They come out of our office. I like to think that we do really good work. So they will be year-to-year leases, okay? One other comment about the density, it's 14 total dwelling units. To call each room a dwelling unit technically is correct, but it's not as if we're adding 14 homes or 14 multifamily dwelling units. They're one person per room. So if a married couple or a family showed up and said, we want to sign up, well, you each get a room. Okay, so we're not packing five people into one room. So 14 residents, I suppose I would say. Additionally, I think right now the latest statistic generally I've heard in Ames is that it's about a 70% occupancy rate right now, which is on the low end. Granted, we're in summertime. But I would anticipate, notwithstanding my client's strong desire to have 14 renters at all times on those year leases, that you could probably anticipate somewhere between 8 to 10 residents in any given year, just based upon the statistics of maximum occupancy versus how many people are actually living there. So I wanted to address those things just generally. As to the clients or as to the tenants that we would want to be attracting, as I believe Wanda and Bill had noted at the July 5th meeting, graduate students, perhaps older college students in Ames at Iowa State University is the target audience. I don't think Wanda or Bill have any desire to have young college students or that sort of renter in the building. And to be quite honest, I don't think a 19-year-old college student who's going to college mainly for the social aspect is going to be renting a dormitory-style residence in Shipley. So I don't think that that concern is all that relevant to the consideration here today. Wanda and Bill are perfectly happy to comply with all of the conditions that have been set forth by the county, with the exception of one that I'll note in a minute. And I have told them that the conditions set forth by the county are good ideas, whether the county said you need to meet these conditions or not, both for liability purposes, for insurance purposes, and just for business purposes. The one condition is the additional condition that was brought up, which is Wanda being a permanent resident and owner of the building. I guess part of it is I don't know what that means, to be honest with you. Permanent resident means a lot of different things. Does that mean permanent occupant? I don't know exactly what the county's language is intended to mean there. Generally, the conditional use permit is going to be transferable to successors, heirs, and assigns. Obviously, if one of the conditions is that the person is a permanent occupant, well, none of us are permanent occupants of the earth, so that means that the permit by its nature would be rescinded or expire upon Wanda's death. The other issue is in terms of ownership. I would never advise a client to own a rental dwelling in their personal name. That is possibly the worst idea you can set forth. And what the plan would be for Wanda to have a limited liability company wherein she's the sole owner, but the limited liability company would be the owner of the building. Wanda would not in any legal sense be title holder to any of the property on which that Shipley School building sits. And if that were a condition that were a deal breaker for the county, Wanda would have to make that decision, but I would tell you right now that I would say it's not worth it. You're going to have tenants there, and you don't want personal liability to attach. Along those same lines, I don't think that her permanent residence, occupancy, ownership, however you want to call it, addresses any statutory requirements in the code, nor does it actually address any of the concerns raised by the residents or by the neighbors. You heard issues about fire safety. The fire marshal has signed off on it with the conditions that must be met. Wanda and Bill are willing to meet those. You heard about traffic issues. I've advised my clients that if it really became an issue to put everybody in the on-site parking anyway, you reduce your liability risk with people parking in that street side parking. That center street is convenient for the residents. I don't think traffic is actually an issue. You have this vague notion of crime. Well, I mean, anytime you introduce one person, one additional person into any neighborhood, you incrementally increase the possibility of some crime occurring. But simply stadium, I'm concerned about crime generally, does not meet the burden that is required under the code for the board to find that the conditions or the code provisions will not be met. The commission has already noted that the provisions related to 90.04 sub 1 are met. The conditions of 90.04 sub 2 are met. The idea that there is somehow going to be additional crime is just not supported by anything other than someone saying it. Additionally, even if it were supported by something other than just saying it, Wanda's residency and ownership of the building do nothing to alter that. You know, Wanda's not a security guard. She's not law enforcement. Her being on the premises will do nothing at all to deter or alleviate whatever tiny amount of concern there may be for crime. I'd talk to my clients about if there really is that sort of concern, then let's install security cameras. That would be a condition that would be reasonably implemented if there is an actual concern about crime. So having Wanda be a permanent resident and owner, I do not think is a condition that is reasonable under the code. I don't think that the concerns that have been raised meet the burden that would be required under the code to attach that condition, and I simply think it's unnecessary, especially given all the other conditions that that Wanda and Bill are more than willing to comply with. Other than those handful of things, I have no further comments unless the board has questions.
I do have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Since you and and the applicant are assuring us that this is not supposed to be, you know, going to people like a husband, wife, and kids and that kind of thing, would it not behoove the board in each of those recommendations, whichever we choose, it continually says multifamily. To me, multifamily means more than one person. And yes, it may be two people, but to me, there's a technicality also here in the literature that may not be their intention. But if they have more vacancies than they are looking forward to, that it would be very tempting to say, okay, this one time I'm going to let this five people live in this one room or whatever the situation would be. So would it not be reasonable to change the wording in each of those scenarios from multifamily to whatever you would deem a legal word that would symbolize their intent to only rent to one or two people per room?
Well, I believe that Jerry and or Amelia could speak more intelligently than I could as to the
wording.
The ordinance's definition of multifamily.
Okay.
What I'm taking as multifamily is the building itself will be multifamily, not each dwelling unit. If the board wanted to attach a condition that said one person per room,
mm-hmm.
I don't believe the applicant would have any issue with that. Again, I don't believe it's the intent, and I know cold comfort, right? But you've seen the size of the rooms, and it's simply not suitable for...
Well, that's my other point, too. It really isn't. And so do the sizes of the room dictate that they can't have more than so many people per room, according to the fire department?
So I think, like I said, planning can likely speak more intelligently about that than I can. The one caveat that I would say is, you know, we are, by law, unable to attach sort of familial restrictions to tenant applicants. You can't deny someone, strictly speaking, the ability to rent because they're a family. Now, they can be required to meet the conditions of your application and the suitability of the building, but this is just sort of recently, but if someone comes along and says, you know, I have kids, you can't say, sorry, no kids.
Right.
You know? So that would be the one caveat to any condition that would be attached. Obviously, the board wouldn't be, my argument would be, the board can't impose an unlawful condition.
Right.
But my client would be perfectly happy with, I believe, having a condition in there that would limit the number of people, in all likelihood, persons, one, per unit. We have a maximum already of 14, so I suppose you could say, well, you have 14 units, but you have four people in one, and you have, you know, six unoccupied. Wouldn't be smart business for my client, because then they're getting one rent rather than four. But in any event, the condition is 14 total occupants currently.
And then my other comment is, on one hand, I can see your comment pertaining to the undue burden of the requirement that she live on the premises. However, on the other hand, even on a dormitory floor, they have a monitor. And when you have people that are sharing the commons and a bathroom and different personalities and stuff like that, to just not have anybody there who is, quote, in control or running the show, so to speak, I do find that a little, with that many people, I do feel that without somebody there as in that capacity, it doesn't necessarily maybe have to be the owner, but somebody has to be the gatekeeper, so to speak, to make sure that, you know, there's, I mean, if there's stealing issues, if there's, you know, arguments, blah, blah, blah.
And I think that is an understandable condition. That
okay, there
would
be somebody who is...
We have discussed that even aside from any conditions attached, it would...
You'd have to have a manager.
Well, I guess I would say is the city of Ames has now probably pretty close to, I don't know, 30% of their rental units are what I call renter-ridden. Okay, so, and in many instances, these are four people thrown together by the property owner. You rent room, bedroom A, you know, B, C, D. And then the common area is it's the same size as a normal apartment. There's nobody on site there, you know, as a referee or as, you know, law enforcement or anything like that. That said, the concern is understandable. I think it's very different to say there has to be an on-site manager and what that might mean, rather than saying the applicant has to be the permanent resident and owner. Additionally, an on-site manager to me doesn't necessarily mean someone who's there 24/7. If there was a condition that there had to be an on-site manager who is there at least once a day, that's vastly different than saying the applicant personally has to own it, personally has to live there into perpetuity, or the, you know, the use permit is rescinded or expires.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, folks.
Comments from the public?
Hi, I'm Jody French. I live at 59793 Center Street. I'm directly east, so the property that they showed directly east of the property, my property butts up right next to that one. So I'm in the one that wasn't shaded. So I would like to say I'm down the block. I've lived at this residence since 1980. My parents bought it when I was four. And later, my husband and I purchased it, and we have two small children. The Shipley School has been a part of my childhood and has always held a special place in my heart. When we were younger, it was owned by a swine company and later to a Japanese company. During the Japanese company ownership, I spent a lot of time in the school, which is why I do not see how this proposal will be a positive solution. I do not believe there are enough amenities for that many people and definitely not college students. There isn't even reliable internet or cable in Shipley. We mostly rely on hotspots off of our phones. And how will 14 people cook for themselves in one kitchen? I don't even think that there's delivery out there. But I'd like to ask if the applicant and the county has actually done a sufficient look at the traffic. I don't know that the example of the 2015 that the staff showed is relevant. And I'm not sure which road they're talking about. but during... the public meeting, it was mentioned that the population of Shipley would increase 200%. I have to assume this will increase traffic as 200% as well. I agree that the paved road that they mentioned, which is 580th, which we also call the Cambridge Blacktop, to Highway 30 will not be impacted. That's just a normal blacktop road. But they failed to show how this significant increase would affect the gravel road to 580th, which is 260th Street. That is the main practical road route to Ames and even to Des Moines. There's seven residences on that road, and I believe one was just sold and is being rented, and I've noticed that there's a lot of cars in that area, so I think that increases the amount of traffic now, but I'm not sure, along that road. Then you also have the surrounding area of Shipley that used that road to go to Ames that may be on the Blacktop Road that ends at Shipley, basically, and then turns into gravel to go onto that road. So it's just a 1 mile. There's also a lawn care business. I'm not sure when they came into Shipley, but they purchased what was the old grain elevator just on the other side of the railroad tracks. I work in Ames. So there's mornings that I'll pass four of those employees coming to work because they have to come and pick up the trucks, and they'll haul equipment. Plus, we have our farmers down the road that you meet. Besides me working, my children have activities in Ames. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, on that gravel road, my family alone makes 8 trips down that road. So now you take an additional 14 residents, or 8 or 10, what council said. At a minimum, that could be 28 additional passes. If you've got students, we know students aren't in class from 8 to 5. They're going to have a break. They're going to come back. They're going to come home. They're going to go back at night. So that's just a minimum of a possibility of 20, 28 passes down that road. I don't think this should be taken lightly. The applicant may want to think that the residents of Shipley of the school will take the gravel road, which I believe is 595th north, but they're so close to 260th, it's just not practical. I've lived out there my entire life, well, since I was 4, and 260th is the most traveled and most practical use to get to Ames. They also inquired, the board at the other public meeting inquired about comparisons of what the applicant wants to do with a school. Some members brought up Milford, which I went to Milford. I don't think this can be used as an example because it is, in fact, a single-family home right now. The North Grant School, located at Lincoln Way and 580th, is another example. However, I don't think it's a good comparison as well. I contacted the owner. The school was completely remodeled. There's individual apartments. Currently, the property owner lives there, and 4 additional apartments with all amenities are rented out. They have each apartment, bathroom, kitchen, washer, and dryer. It's located in a high traffic area, not on a gravel road, and not in such close proximity to the neighbors like we have at Shipley. I'm all for repurposing the school, but in my opinion, the school was repurposed when Wanda Camp bought it. It's a single family dwelling. It's not in jeopardy of falling apart. It has an owner. And it looks great. Honestly, the property does look great. I mean, they have cleaned it up. I'd rather have the junk there than 14 additional residents. Probably the most concern I have is the type of people that it will attract, which council did indicate or discuss. You do talk about, I think the biggest concern in the immediate proximity of Shipley is the transfer. Cambridge School, I brought it up the last time, is a good example, if in fact it is still declined as it was. If someone's there, the possibility of crime, theft, whatever, would go down. But the concern is if it's transferred and it's just left to whoever wants to live there and they don't have a vested interest in it. If the owners are looking to expand the school, I support bed and breakfast office space, but I cannot support a group home, low-income housing as I see it, as the applicant has described it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
My name is Charlie Lloyd, L-L-O-I-D, 26606 16th Avenue in Nevada. So I'd be a mile and a half east of the property and a half mile south. And I'm going to talk about it from an ag standpoint. To me, this is the most creative. If I was a college professor, this is the most creative. I'd get an A for this creative writing. And the thing is, as you mentioned on the first, I'm sorry, young lady, you, how are you related to the board? How are you related? What are you doing for the county? What's your position?
I'm a planner.
You're a planner. Okay, thank you. You said in the first slide compatibility, and that's the whole thing to me, compatibility. We are in R1 ag situation out there, and I was going to bring up Milford Schools and how good that looks, but I won't because you said it already. But we're zoned A1, and my situation, I'm not, as a farm, I took a lot of grain down that road, and I turn right up there. A lot of traffic goes through there. And fortunately, right now, there's not a lot of traffic in and out there, but that's, you know, you have two 38,000-pound grain wagons behind you. It's a danger just to go on the road, really. And that's going to get even worse with more people there. So that is my concern. The grad students. If I sweated through 4 years of Iowa State in the residence halls or out there, and all of a sudden I'm going to be a grad student now, and I'm going to come to Shipley, that argument there, I can't buy. I would not do that. So this is creative type thing all the way. You, sir, are an excellent lawyer because you are straddling the fence line and you're walking the fence line and you're not falling either side of it. The thing that bothers me is you said LLC. LLC smacks of the responsibility. The pipeline that came through, they're LLC, Dakota LLC. There's no responsibility. Once it gets through, there's no one to go through. And this LLC is just an excuse for washing my hands of situational bad. It's not a good deal. In One Story County, so I'm talking from a safety issue, and One Story County gets into this, then anyone with an old Morton building, any kind of thing, once you grant this, it's a long way to go back. And then everyone wants to say, well, I'm going to make that old building into 3 or 4 residences. So once you go down that slippery slope, there's no going back. And that's my thing right now. So country is country. That's why we live out there. That's why we're farmers. And so, yeah, you have RAs at Iowa State. But I was in basic, when I was going through basic and military, that's how we had it. We had all the individual rooms and one big kitchen, you know. But and it was terrible. There were guys running all over. So we really don't want to get back to this, especially in Shipley, Iowa. So anyway, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Public comment.
I'm Lowell Deaton. I live 58149260. I don't know where they get their traffic, but that gravel road is 260th is a busy road. I am retired. I can sit in the yard. I count better than 50 to 60 cars a day go by. And it's a gravel road, and I have to eat the dust. That's all I got to say.
Thank you. Next.
Kelly Sheets. I live at 25705 595th Avenue. It's the property just north of the camps. Just want to make it known I'm opposed to it. And Mr. Holland, while I agree that a 19-year-old doesn't want to come live at this property, when I was in school at Iowa State, there's a lot of other places I'd rather live. I don't see how we can keep it to graduate students once we've reached the conditional use permit. There's no way of enforcing that. And so to me, the $300 a month attracts the wrong kind of people. And while it's terrible to just make a blanket statement that there will be increased crime because there are more people, I think common sense tells us that $300 a month will bring undesirable people to the area. As a resident that had a truck stolen from my driveway 15 months ago, I don't want any more undesirable people in my neighborhood, and quite frankly, as a gun owner, I won't accept it. I just don't see how this is a great idea. I don't mean any ill will towards you folks. Have nothing against you, but in my opinion, the kind of people that this will attract is not good.
Thank you. Next.
My name is Chris Floyd, and I live at 26606 610th Avenue. I guess my concern is what I see here where the owners claim there are 5 points made on what we received. One is, first of all, we'll remain living there and have space there. And now we heard that that may not necessarily be so. Second, the owner's intent is to only make units available to Iowa State University graduate students. So I see Iowa State University, okay? So is there going to be a confirmation that those students are indeed students at Iowa State University? Will they contact the registrar's office? Okay, what does Iowa State student mean? Is it online classes? I mean, I guess, is it just for Iowa State students? Because I do know that, you know, when my kids needed to be on insurance, we had to certify that they indeed were Iowa State students. So there's a way of doing that. And what if they are that and then, you know, 2 weeks into classes they drop out? Are they Iowa State students? And so those are the kind, I mean, this whole thing to me smacks of a lot of, and I want to use the word, quote, sneaky, okay, as to exactly what the intent is. One person per unit, that's fine. I know that, you know, if it's going to be like a dorm, I'm assuming male and females, they'll be whatever, and, you know, maybe I'm prudish or whatever, but, you know, just thought I'd throw that out. $300 a month rent. I mean, you know, that's pretty low. And so those are my concern. The other concern is where I live, I cannot get internet. So I have one of those Verizon jetpacks. And I have a son who just did student teaching at his last semester, and he lived at home, and we could not get internet. I mean, he always had to go to Iowa State to get good internet. And I don't know if the people here, the applicants, have a dish or they have something like that, that they're able to provide the kind of internet graduate students need.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
David Jensen, 59595 250th Street. I live 1 mile north of the applicant's building at that intersection. If this goes over 10 minutes, I apologize, but there's more questions here than there are answers. I mean, there's vague there's vague explanations, but I think, you know, I think the scope by which you guys are attempting to judge this, there just needs to be more explanations, and I feel there are things that honestly needs to be looked further into if you're going to vote on it, especially tonight. I would encourage getting more answers, but when you start looking at this from like number six in the very beginning, I believe it brought up the point of 14 units and 14 people. So my question to you two, you three, or anybody in public service here, the way I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, Story County has no housing code, correct? Or housing code enforcement? City of Nevada does. City of Ames does. There is actual legal enforcement of housing code. So when they propose, okay, we're going to keep this limited to 14 people, who's going to enforce that? Does the county have that bandwidth to step in? What department's going to do it? Since they have no housing code enforcement, is the sheriff's department going to do it? Is the assessor's office going to do it? Is the fire department going to do it? You know, there's, once again, this is a big, big question. So you have to answer that question. Who's, we can say all the things that we want to say. You know, what are, you know, pardon my language, but, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And hope is not a strategy. You know, we hope that the people that we get in there are good people. I hope the people that they would intend to get in there are good people, but you can't guarantee that. So you have, in my 47 years on this earth, I've probably only learned this in the last few years, but it's much better to hope for the best, but plan for the worst. And that's part of why I think, as a consensus, the neighbors that surround this property are planning for the worst, hoping for the best. Because, like Charlie pointed out, once you pass this, the slope is steep and slippery. So even if it does pass ownership, and even if the condition is that the CUP dies with Wanda Camp, that is no guarantee that the next new owner, whether it's family or somebody completely different, isn't going to be standing up here right now as the same applicant. And if the place is operated for 1 month, 1 year, 1 decade, they're going to stand in front of you and say, equal protection under the law. You guys passed it for them. You need to pass it for me. So I want that to be taken into consideration. And Jody's brought this up. I encourage you to, if you haven't already, visit the old school down in Cambridge. That's planning for the worst. That's planning for the worst, and that's all I'll say with that. One question that I do have for the fire department, and, you know, I'm just putting this out there, and I'm not questioning his ability to do his job, but is the city of Nevada equipped to fight a multi-level fire in a rural setting? There's no fire hydrants out there, so all the water has to be trucked out there. I have no idea. That's, you know, in my positioning for this meeting, it's just, you know, you think of everything. I'm sure, you know, he's done his due diligence, he knows his job, but I'm just asking that question. Okay, so now we get around to this question of affordable housing. Why are we talking about affordable housing? You know, if the intent is for graduate students, why are we talking about affordable housing? Why do those two points collide in the same conversation? Well, I see affordable housing as if how we all look at hog confinements or how we look at oil refineries. It's like everybody's for it, but not in my backyard. So, you know, do you live near the Shipley School? Do any of you live near the Shipley School? Or the owner to the north that sent a letter that said they were in favor of it? They live in Texas. They live in Texas. It's just like everything else. Everybody's for it as long as it's not in their backyard. Well, I have to say that most of the people that are sitting here today, it is in their backyard. It is in their backyard, and once again, we're back to planning for the worst. You know, we'd like to think that crime won't go up, but as, you know, as that caliber of tenant comes into play, the potential for greater problems exists, and nobody can deny that fact. I've owned rental property in Ames for 22 years. I've managed it on the first 5 to 7, and it was brutal. Ever since then, it's all professionally managed. But it doesn't change the fact that I've seen it all. And just when you don't think, just when you think you haven't seen it all, you see it all again. So, you know, once again, everybody's for it as long as it's not in their backyard. So, with that, I have spoken, you know, and I cannot speak for them, but there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, a minimum of 7 residential property owners that live within a mile and a half of this proposition. I've spoken with them personally face to face in the time leading up to this, and all 7 of them are not in favor. So you're seeing a cross section here, but definitely not the majority. There are more people that are not at this meeting, couldn't attend, or on vacation. et cetera, et cetera. So with that, one other thing that I would like to just be brought and put onto the record. One thing that, okay, it says, you know, in this, for the P&Z meeting, notices were sent out June 28th. Okay, this is leading into a national holiday weekend for a meeting that was scheduled for the day after a national holiday. Now, you know, I know everybody follows guidelines, but wouldn't you agree that there was probably a lack of good judgment on behalf of scheduling such short notice scheduling for an event that is going to happen the day after the 4th of July? And then secondly, I would also like to point out that maybe in situations like this, and I don't know how you set the standard, but, you know, it's for a discussion other than this, but I think it needs to be brought to everybody's attention that I know the law defines a CUP, you only have to notify property owners within a quarter of a mile of the subject property. In situations like this where the gravity might be a little bit heavier than what's at stake, that radius be expanded to, you know, to encompass a greater area. I only found out about it because of the sheets. I mean, it's such a small radius. It's like, well, let's keep the crowd low. And I'm not saying there was any ill will intended, but I think there needs to maybe be some provisions put forth in the future. You know, with what's afforded to us, the ability of technology and getting the word out, so to speak, I think it would be advantageous for the county to look at that as adopting that we start looking at a greater scope of the residents affected. And people can choose from there if they decide to attend or not. Thank you.
Thank you.
Randy Collings, 588-53 250th Street. Dealing with Dave's last comment, I believe the impact area wasn't well defined for this endeavor. Obviously, the people that live along the road 260th, all of those people should have been informed of this situation, as well as the people on 250th, because that traffic will affect those house or those residences. So I do agree fully with what Dave said. I really want to compliment the camps in trying to get this thing improved. The building does look outstanding. I really, really want to compliment you on that. As a grad student, I wouldn't want to live there. You don't have the amenities. The rent's right, but the rent usually, and this is usually, isn't what deters grad students from going to school or where they live. I don't know how you can target, unless you have an endorsement from Iowa State, I don't know how you can target to say, yeah, we're going to rent to grad students and exclude everybody else. I don't believe you can. I think you have a problem in that area. It's wonderful to target to that, but you aren't offering the things that a grad student would want. I graduated from Iowa State. Would I want to live there? No, because I'd want to be closer to Iowa State. I'd want to be on campus. That's my belief. Not all students are that way. I understand that. In the same token, you've got to offer the amenities that would draw those people in, and they're not there. That's all I've got to say. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thought I'd show up and talk about fire stuff, if that's okay. My name's Ray Reynolds. I live at 1710 3rd Street here in Nevada. I don't live near the camps. I met them one time. I don't think they're slumlords. I can tell you in 18 years of doing fire inspections, I've seen slumlords. I've inspected apartments as an inspector for the state. I'm a certified fire inspector and investigator. The Nevada Fire Department, our largest part of our fire district, is rural. We cover 137 square miles. We are quite familiar with rural tank operations.
on any fire in the rural, you're going to get 7,000 gallons of water coming immediately. We're one of two fire ladder trucks in the county that are equipped. We do have experience in multi-story apartment fires where we pulled a person out of the building. What I can tell you about this building is it's fire-resistant construction. It's got cement between the floors. It's got a working fire alarm system that covers all rooms and spaces. I've asked the camps to do a fire escape inspection, have a company come in. The company started the National Fire Escape Association. They did that within 2 days. The company called me and told me that the fire escape is adequate and in good shape for the 14 people that will be using it. The camps have called me when I was in Chicago at the UL Burn Labs. They've had regular contact with me by phone asking me to clarify positions about fire rating, separating the gym from the building. I actually think the building is in pretty good shape, and I think it's pretty safe for 14 people to be in it. Again, I don't live in the neighborhood. I'm not here to talk about traffic or who can pick their neighbors and who can't, but I can tell you from my perspective, the camps have done everything I've asked them to do. There will be annual inspections, and the fire alarm is required to be inspected annually if it's in a building, and the fire escape will be required to be inspected on a three-year basis based on our current fire code. The fire code that applies to all buildings in the state of Iowa is the 2015 International Fire Code. And that's also the code that we adopt in the city of Nevada. That's the state fire code. So even though there isn't a state building code, structures above, the term multifamily is anything above, we call it anything above three dwelling units. So single family home, that's just a term we use in the industry. Multifamily means more than one person from a different family origin can live there. So the fire code applies to any structure that has more than three non-related family members living there. So we would see a duplex wouldn't particularly apply to the fire code, but this building does apply to the 2015 International Fire Code. So there is a standard this building must meet for people to live in it. Other than that, I'll take any questions. I should mention that we're in the process of signing an automatic mutual aid agreement with COLO so that both of our ISO ratings will come down to save property tax or property insurance rates. So that automatic agreement will also bring an additional 5,000 gallons of water to a fire. We currently are part of the Story County's mutual aid agreement, so we can call upon any fire department in a structure like this. We obviously would utilize that mutual aid. So I'm not worried about this structure catching on fire. Oh, yeah, a lot of times with apartments, we do have an inspection program in Nevada where we inspect the common areas. And one of the things that the camps have asked that we've offered, given the population that they're looking for, is to provide, we provide fire safety training to residents. Iowa State has that inducting class that goes through fire training. So we would look at providing them fire extinguisher training based on their request that we come out and do that, fire drill training and anything that would apply. Unattended cooking is one of our biggest hazards, and we had talked about we do free stovetop fire stop installs. It's a fire extinguisher unit we put under their hood, so short of sprinkler in the building, I think we're giving it the best fire prevention we can give it.
I do have one question, and maybe this you'll have to defer because it's not your specialty. But with an older building and if they're making changes and remodeling and stuff like that, do you, I have never been there, so this is why I'm asking you. Is there a current a concern, A, for asbestos in general, and then if there's a fire, asbestos issues?
Yeah, when we look through the building is mostly brick and concrete. I'm no asbestos expert, but typically where we see the asbestos is siding, window caulk, and floor tile.
And ceiling, usually.
Yeah, I did not see, usually it's the wraps around pipes and conduits and stuff, but we look for any health hazards that are related to that,
yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm not saying the building doesn't have asbestos. You would have to have someone come in for that. But typically, a building maintained is not the problem. Where we get into asbestos issues and when we do burnings, training burns, is when we're tearing buildings apart or demolishing the buildings. But buildings left intact typically are not an asbestos risk.
Right, I know that, but I'm just saying if they're going to, and is that another concern? And I'm sorry, I don't know how much remodeling you have or have you done, but...
Most of the remodeling I'm seeing is adding sheetrock to create a one-hour fire rating.
Okay.
And quite honestly, their biggest issue is separating the gymnasium, which is a roof bow truss system,
mm-hmm.
and that they're kind of using as a home hobby area from the rest of the building. And that involves sheetrock over two penetrations, which is two doors that lead to the by the boys' bathroom and by the kitchen. So they're going to wall that off and not make that area accessible. So, and there are no residents besides the camps that are living below grade, which would be the area that the camps are currently residing in.
Okay, thank you.
So, yep.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Don't
have to
go up.
To the podium, please.
We weren't notified of this, and we live 1/2 mile from the schoolhouse, and we've lived there for 50 years.
Excuse me, could you state your name and address, please?
Nan Ripley. We live at 269 595th Avenue, so that road that goes by the schoolhouse is the road we live on.
Okay.
We're 1/2 mile away from there. I worked at Iowa State. I worked with students, and it doesn't matter if they're students or low housing or whoever. If they live in a room and there's no bathroom in there, there's no kitchen, and they all have to meet in one area to do that, always in any other dormitory, and this is what this is looking like, whether it's for low income or whether it's for students, which I don't see it being, there is a dorm person that's there that helps them all the time. There's not one dormitory at Iowa State. There's not one living facility that I know of. My parents and my parents-in-law live in a low income, and there are people that live on the property. That's part of what's there. They live on the property so that they can help the tenants. And I know for a fact that they have not lived in that schoolhouse for 12 months ever. They're rarely there. They're there in the summer, but they are not there in the winter. And to be able to buy a property and make it into whatever you want it to and then have someone else take care of it, that's fine. But it's not fine to come into a community like this, buy a school, and say it's for your home and then do that to the rest of us here. We all have family on that road. We've all been like family on that road. There is a lot of traffic. We put down the oil, the corn oil and everything, but it still doesn't happen. But if I would sit in my yard and I watch the farmers that go by every day that are hauling grain and so forth, and this is just not in the summer, that road is very, very busy. And you put that many more people in, whether they have jobs or whatever they do, it's putting a burden on the rest of us. And I'm only one of everyone that lives in this area, and I'm 1/2 mile from there. So those two miles, 3 miles farmers that have ground by us and behind us, they're all there working. And there isn't anyone that I know of that lives in this area that would approve of this. It's just looking for things to happen and not good things. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next. I'm Shirley Floyd. I live at 26198 Sand Hill Trail in Grant Township, about 3 miles west and a little south of Shipley. And I have been Wanda and Ed's friend, and now Wanda and Bill's friend for about 20 years. There probably hasn't been a week that I haven't been to Shipley. Wanda and I are rug hookers, and we make quilts for charities. I have seen that schoolhouse developed into what it looks like today. Everyone that lives there in Shipley should be so proud of what has happened with that school and what it looks like today. The county should be so proud of what that schoolhouse looks like. No one has mentioned the amount of money and work and sweat that goes into making a property look like it does today. The neighbors that are around there should, as I said before, be so proud of what has happened. Instead of coming up with different things they think might happen because they think something has happened similar to that in the past. The road that goes by their place, 260th, is a gravel road. That isn't anything, and the traffic on there doesn't have anything to do with Bill and Wanda's situation. They can't help that there's whatever traffic that's on there, and they can't help that it's a gravel road. I moved here from Illinois and 20 years ago, and I was a landowner or a landlord. I had 10 houses with 40 college kids in it. Western Illinois University is in Macomb, Illinois. I was a landlord for 10 years. I was a good manager because I always collected my rent. I made friends with my tenants. They made friends with me. My houses at the end of my term were all sold. They all looked better than they did when I first got them. They were all sold in one lump package to somebody else. And it was a good experience for me. The people who think that college kids are criminals and somebody to run away from, just, I don't think, have been exposed to what college kids really are. They're people. And I know Wanda and Bill treat people like people. And therefore, they won't have any trouble in communicating what the desires are of the people that live there. They won't have any trouble in doing that. And it's all in good management. And I don't have any doubt that Bill and Wanda will be the best managers ever. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments?
My name is Scott Small. I live at 59183 250th Street, which is a mile north and back to the west. I actually work with college students every day. I'm a faculty member here in Ames. And I actually had the opportunity to talk with some graduate students over the last few days. And I'll be honest, graduate students aren't going to live in this development, period. We can look at amenities. We can look at all those other things. When you talk $300 rent, our students are paying way more than that. But it's for the amenities. It's for the community. Shipley's a great community. I've obviously been in it just for a short time. But more importantly, I think it's a matter of looking at the type of individuals we're going to attract when we look at this dollar amount for rent. It really doesn't matter what it is in terms of maybe even it was $500. But when it boils down to it, it's a matter of individuals that we're going to attract, the type of people. So I'm definitely opposed to this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next.
Hi, I'm Mike Camp. I live on 560th Avenue, Cambridge. Anyway, that's my mom's schoolhouse. And I did a lot of work to that schoolhouse. And so trust me, we don't want undesirable people there. That's all I got.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sue Harrison. I live at 59278 260th Street. When you saw pictures, we were the farm right west of Shipley. I've lived there since 1989. I agree with basically what everyone said. I think the Shipley Schoolhouse looks great. The yard, you know, they keep the yard up. They've put in new windows. It looks good. I do not think graduate students are going to live there. I see all those people going up and down my road every day. I go to work in Ames. My husband's a farmer. He hauls grain. It's just, we don't need the extra traffic, and I really do not think graduate students are going to live there. The same thing everyone else said. We don't have internet out there. Do they all have cars? They can live in Ames. I think Dave said 70% occupancy right now. There's all kinds of places in Ames to live. They can use SciRide, get to the Iowa State Library, all the eating places. I just don't think it's a good idea.
Thank you. Next. Mr. Holland.
I first wanted to sort of dawned on me as I'm sitting here listening to all the comments. I wanted to say thanks to the people who came out to make comments. I'm born and raised in Nevada. I live in Story County. Not that that means anything to the board, but went to school with Randy's daughter, friends with Sue's kids. You know, I know a bunch of people in the room, so it's, you know, I understand exactly what they're going through. There's a development going on in my backyard in rural Story County right now as well. So I get all that. And I get wanting to be able to show up and voice your concern. And I think that is laudable, and I'm glad everybody did it. That said, it's not majority rule. That's not what the code provides. And, Mr. McGill, I know that you said at the outset you're not here to endeavor to interpret the code provisions, so on and so forth, and this isn't a trial. I'm not a trial attorney anyway, and we're not giving jury instructions with very explicit details on what the three of you need to do in order to either grant or deny the application. That said, I don't want to lose the forest for the trees here, okay? There's been a lot of concerns about traffic. I grew up in Nevada. I've lived in Houston. I know that traffic is a relative term, okay? When I lived in Houston, it's not, and if anyone's lived in a big city, it's not how far, it's how long, right? When you live in a small town, it's how far, because it's about a mile a minute. Everybody gets that. I moved back to Nevada, had a solo practice for about 4 years. The traffic light out here on 6th Street and Lincoln Way, once you're back for a couple months, all of a sudden that's traffic. It's, oh my gosh, I've been sitting at this red light for 15 seconds. It has not yet turned green, you know. I understand that there is a concern about traffic generally. The code, though, says with the traffic consideration, unduly congest. Okay? The question is, would granting this application as it pertains to traffic unduly congest the proposed area? It sounds to me like it may already be congested. What everyone is saying here is true, adding, even if we said 14 cars, I would submit to the board, is not even capable of unduly congesting. We talk in percentages of traffic. To me, that seems a little misleading. I hesitate to say silly, but it borders on the absurd or silly to say we're increasing traffic by 200%. That means nothing in a vacuum. We counted 15 cars one day. The next day we counted 30. Percentage-wise, that's a really big increase. Again, not losing the forest for the trees. Unduly congest. Is it going to unduly congest? I would submit to you the answer is quite obviously no. The other main theme throughout the comments has been grad students won't want to live there. thing I would say to that is the amenities, strictly speaking, are not in front of the board. It's not a part of the consideration that the board should use to make the determination as to whether to grant or deny the application. If it has internet, doesn't matter, right? Now the board may say, okay, but if there's no internet, why is a grad student going to want to live there? Again, let's not lose the forest for the trees. It's not that the camps are saying grad students only will live there, and we're not trying to be sneaky. The point about providing a demographic is simply to provide the board with an idea of the type of tenant that the camps want to have at their building. Remember, even if they're only there for part of the year, they're still living there, right? Remember that Wanda and Bill and Mike have put in countless hours and countless dollars to improve the property. There is no one in this room who is more invested in having high-quality tenants than Bill, Wanda, and Mike. Nobody. So to be concerned that this is going to be granted and that Wanda and Bill are going to put it in an LLC and sell it off. First of all, there's no market for it. Okay? Let me tell you that right now. If Wanda died tomorrow and Bill came to me to administer her estate, when we go to report what the value of this LLC is to the court, I'm going to discount it by 30% automatically off the top because there's no marketability. Nobody is coming through town to buy up this property. I can just tell you that. Especially if what everybody here says is true, that nobody wants to rent. Right? What everyone here says is true, then we shouldn't be concerned about congestion. Shouldn't be concerned about crime. Shouldn't be concerned about much at all because no one wants to rent there. Certainly shouldn't be worried about someone buying up the property to have it as a multifamily dwelling. The other thing is $300 in rent is not set in stone. It's not even set in sand at this point. Okay, affordable housing and low-income housing, as Amelia pointed out, are, strictly speaking, two very different things. I understand the concerns Ms. Youngberg expressed during the initial questions that the board had for me and what everyone else has said, is that, well, you know, this thing is granted and they can't get students in there that they want. There's no guarantee that they're not just going to rent it out to whoever might come along fly by night. Yeah, Ryan, you say they're going to be year-by-year leases, but there's no guarantee. Well, Wanda and Bill would have no incentive to do that. Again, they're the ones with the investment, and also, there's currently nobody renting it. It wasn't purchased as a rental property. It's not like some of my clients who go to buy a condo, you know, 200-unit condo, and they can't get people in it. Well, then they have a problem. They have to start lowering their rental standards. That's not the case here. This wasn't purchased as a rental investment, right? So if nobody rents, then they're not out any money. They're already, those costs are sunk, right? I also think we just need to be a little bit careful as a county, and I say we because I live in Story County. We need to be a little bit careful about in public saying, we don't want thus and such type of person here. Okay? I understand what the implication is, but as a county, I think we ought to be very, very careful about using that as a consideration, either minor or great, in not granting an application for a type of application that's here. We have criteria. They're set out in the code. We've seen them. Nothing in that code says this type of people. They talk about safety of the neighbors, but there's been nothing presented here, nor anything presented by planning in either the initial staff report for the July 5th meeting or the follow-up report or the presentation here that has established in any sort of way that crime is a legitimate concern. Nothing. And remember, again, there's a burden of persuasion in the code, right? The board has been given an obligation that those presenting in opposition have the burden of persuading that the application should be denied if the criteria are otherwise met. And again, the number of people voicing a concern is not a valid objection. It's simply not. Okay? Again, I understand what everybody is saying here. You probably moved to Shipley or you live in Shipley for a reason. And adding a maximum of 14 people, while I say it's silly to talk in percentages, it doubles the population of the town. I get that. Again, that's all been considered by planning and looking at the criteria under the code, which is the board's obligation as well. And if the criteria have been met, unless one of those four or eight, depending upon how you count, counter criteria have been established, then it's a mandate. The board shall grant the application.
Mr. Holland, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
What is the camp's experience with leasing and renting and that sort of thing?
Well, Mr. Lyle can speak independently if you'd like, but he's managed properties in the past. And what I've talked about is, and I'll let him give you more details on that because managed properties in the past doesn't much answer your question. But what we've talked about is putting aside all the conditions is having a property management entity, whether it's Bill and Wanda personally or, you know, another entity. Obviously, we represent all sorts of property management companies. That's a business issue. But I would let Bill tell you specifically, if you'd like, Mr. McGill, as to what his precise history is with managing properties.
I would, please.
My name is Bill Lyle. I live at the schoolhouse. I'm Wanda Kemp's husband. In reference to rental property, I owned and managed 15. And I can tell you I've got a lot of experience with rental tenants, situations. And the secret is to have an application that you use to qualify people, and you are tough on them, I guess is the word I like to say. That's doing the first, it's late on the third, and you're going to get out if you didn't pay. And rules. Rules are the greatest thing because that keeps people in line, tenants in line, neighbors are happy, and you don't have police calls. So I guess what other experience? I managed those for almost 20 years.
Okay.
And that was in Des Moines.
Okay.
Were they apartments, homes, duplexes, all of the above?
I had two duplexes, and the rest were single-family homes. I did have four on low-rent housing, part of the time.
Okay. Thank you. That answered my question.
The rest were just on a simple year-to-year, year-to-year lease.
If I could briefly, I just wanted to address a couple of other things other than some of those broad themes. Again, you know, I don't want to be pedantic, but obviously a limited liability company is not anything to be scared of. If Wanda is the sole owner for certain purposes, it's disregarded. Okay? So to say that there's nobody who is liable is simply false. It would be the limited liability company, and the limited liability company would have a pretty large asset that could be sold at a share of sale if someone sued the limited liability company, for example, the building itself. Okay, so I don't think that's a reasonable consideration in front of the board. There's been a couple issues, a couple of commenters have brought up this slippery slope. It's a conditional use permit. There's no such thing as a slippery slope when it comes to conditional use permits, because every applicant has to apply and abide by certain conditions that are by the code dependent upon the facts and circumstances of the criteria that must be met. So if someone came along and said, hey, I have a Morton building, I've put up four walls and I want to rent it out, I'm guessing planning would say, and they pointed to Wanda and Bill, I'm guessing planning would say that's not even remotely the same. Okay, it's in a different location, it's a different building. There are myriad considerations that would avoid a slippery slope. Again, conditional use permit means conditions are going to be attached regardless. I wouldn't worry about this being precedent. If another client of mine came to me and said, hey, I heard you represented these guys, I have something similar, I'd say, well, we need to assess this independently because no two of these things are alike. Okay. I guess the last thing that I would like to address is certain concerns about not having sufficient assurances or explanations or not being precise enough with what is being presented. Again, that's not the criteria. The applicant is not required, though the board is free to attach whatever conditions it would like, so long as they are reasonably connected to the criteria. The applicant is not required to say, this is precisely what I'm going to do. I've told my clients, and I tell all my clients, the more information we can present to planning, and whether it's the Board of Adjustment or the Board of Supervisors, the better. Because information is your best friend. They can make an informed decision. If they have questions, you can answer them. It seems to me impossible, though, for Wanda or Bill or any applicant to get up here and say, this is exactly who's going to rent these units. This is exactly how it's going to work. And if that was the requirement, then none of these would ever be granted. It's simply not possible. Am I going to get up here and say that there's no possibility that someone would rent and then cause damage to this building or one of the neighbor's buildings, or, you know, God forbid, steal somebody's truck? No, of course not. Because there's no way to guarantee that. And if I did, you guys would think I'm a liar and wouldn't listen to anything else I've said, even assuming you are anyway. So I think it's simply unreasonable for anyone to request any more specificity than what has been provided heretofore. I've worked with a lot of clients who've come to me and said, I have this idea. I have this property. And it hasn't gotten any further than an idea. And the first question you ask them, it kind of starts falling apart. Wanda and Bill, in my opinion, are not that client. They have done a lot of legwork ahead of time before we have gotten to this stage. And in my opinion and in my experience, they have thought this out in much greater detail than a number of folks would have in their position. With that, I thank you for your time. If you have questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Board questions?
Thank you.
I have one, and that is...
Just tell you what. Let's open it up again back to the public. So if you wish to ask that.
This isn't the first time that this building has been put up for apartments. Is that correct? You wanted it to be rented for
rooms, and they've rented us that conditional use.
previous to this, to these?
I don't know if it's ever been.
It was, the previous owners wanted to do the same thing, and the same building and the same situation came up before. It's different now, I think, because they've done a lot of work to make it so. But at that time, it was felt that this is a rural area. It's really not an apartment-type environment. And that the people that would come out to the country to live like this would not be people that would be looking at the country life or at making a living in this area. It just doesn't seem feasible to me. And as far as all of the things they said that the board has to follow, I think they have to follow, but reasonable and just is also part of that.
Sorry, I just want to say one thing. You can't compare Houston, Texas to a gravel road in Shipley. I get that it's already congested, and we've expressed that, so why add more congestion? And you've got the farmers.
Children.
Yeah, children. Even animals. Even in Nevada, you have traffic controls. That's expected. Ames is ridiculous, but nobody's coming in complaining about adding more students to Iowa State University. This is a safety concern. Today, because we've had no rain, if somebody pulls onto that gravel road, when I pull on, I stop. I stop, and they probably get about half a mile down that road before I start again. The dirt is, and I think two areas have the oil, and it's gone. I don't think that was a fair comparison. So.
Charlie Lloyd again. As Perry Mason always said, on redirect, comes back and asks. That's what I'm doing, redirect. Always, the last one to argue to the jury is the last voice heard, and thank God we're on that side. Everything we did, everything we said here, you took around and you turned around, and you said, well, we have control over these people. Then you kept saying we don't have control. You turned everything around. The thing is, I work out in Minneapolis, Minnesota, my other job. They have terrible housing up there. A lot of undesirables, I'm not going to say it. 20, 25 to a house, crime rates skyrocket downtown Minneapolis. The basic question we have here, and then he said, one vote versus one vote. No, it's one vote versus all these people. And then he said, well, why are we even up here? It's because they have to go according to. Why are we here today? That's my question. We have a voice. We're all involved. We're all property owners. We're all taxpayers. Taxpayers. Now, I don't know if you tried to sell the house and you couldn't. To a single family to do like they did in Milford. I'm not sure that I'm not up on that. If you didn't go through, you wanted too much, then you're going to have this other option. Fine. The problem is zoning A1 with the county, that's the biggest problem. That's where I live. We aren't in the city. We aren't rural development. We're A1. We're an ag. That's the thing we got to talk about. Also, the biggest number one thing is once people get older, they leave, they pass away, whatever. Then it comes to be another whole deal. Because then we have a precedent set, we have new owners. Well, they granted something, multifamily. Well, what's going to happen then? See, we have no wherewithal to determine that. And that's our biggest problem. It's the future. It's the future beyond the next few years. And that's the problem.
Wanda Camp. I live at 25922 595th Avenue. I live in the Old Shipley Schoolhouse. I've lived there for 17 years. And of those 17 years, Bill and I were married 5 years ago, and that's when we went to Texas. Other words, I have been there. I didn't realize I had this many neighbors. They've never stopped around and talked to me at all. They don't know me. And they don't know what I've done to the schoolhouse. I just want to say that I still want to do this. I still want to rent to... I thought I wanted to rent to college kids. I thought I wanted to rent to graduate students. maybe I should say I want to rent to somebody that needs a place like I have that could use that kind of space. I don't know. It's all trial. Maybe it's going to work, maybe it's not. All I want is to try to raise the money. I love the schoolhouse. I love fixing it up. But I need to have some income, too. And that's why I'm doing this. I don't see any other way that I can raise money at my age. But I can do this. Thank you. And thank you all for coming. I'm Shirley Cloyd, 26198 Sand Hill Trail again, and I don't know if it's been brought up, but Wanda's daughter lives right across the street with her family, and she has, and then Cindy is her name, and her mother-in-law lives right to the east of the schoolhouse. So the mother-in-law is here, and Wanda's daughter is here. There is not much that can go on at that schoolhouse that they're not aware of at any one time. And I think that this is, think of any property needs continual upkeep. And these neighbors can say, well, it looks so nice the way it is. I like what they have done to the schoolhouse. How many of them would have wanted to have put the time and the effort and the money into it to make it what it is today? And it'll continue to take money to have upkeep. It could be one of these abandoned places with broken windows, tall grass. Then what would the neighbors of Shipley say? Thank you.
I'm Cindy Gordon. I live at 59670 Center Street. I am Wanda's daughter. And my mother and my father started this house out in 1999. They started with this schoolhouse. It has gone from a dump to a good place to live. My father has since passed on. My mother has just remarried. She's always lived in that schoolhouse. And when she's gone, we check the schoolhouse out. That school is never goes 1 week without myself, my brother, my son, my daughter. My mother-in-law lives across the street. And for you all to think that we're going to bring riffraff into Shipley and we're doing this on purpose, that's wrong. If you don't, any of you know us, again, Mom said, I don't even know these people. And that's right, I don't. I don't know any of you. But maybe you should stop by the schoolhouse and check it out. And you'd realize that there are people that need to rent. I have two kids that are going into college. Do you know how much it costs for one room in Ames? And then you're going to spend $17,000 a semester to go to college and you still have to have a place to live? Come on, people. Can't you? It's got place for people to live. I'm sorry if the traffic is congested. There's not a darn thing we can do about it. And I'm sorry if your grain things are out there and whatever. You take grain out, what, 1 month out of the year? You put grain in 1 month out of the year?
Let's keep our comments to the facts, please.
Okay, well.
Thank you. Next? If not, then we will close and we'll deliberate. Laura, do you have any questions before we do that?
No. I do have a question to Mr. Holland. I appreciate your comments.
I think I can speak for the board. I don't think there's any concern that this, whatever the board does decide, that it's based on emotional and what type of people are going to be there. I think the concern is the charge for the rent, and I think maybe a lot of the emotion might come from the fact that this was being presented as student housing. And factual or not factual, my personal opinion as a landlord and the amenities and things, my personal opinion is it isn't going to be for student housing. That has nothing to do with the legality of it. If it's affordable, then I go back to my staff, the staff. If it becomes affordable housing, do we have other issues we have to address besides things that have already been looked at? Because, I mean, I'm talking about elevators, you know, ADA on elevators, and I know there's grandfather things.
So,
but do we have that? I have many questions about.
So, I believe when a project receives federal dollars, if the camps were to accept subsidized subsidies, then that there might be other requirements. I don't enforce those. The county doesn't enforce those. Those are federal requirements.
Okay.
Department of Justice enforces the ADA. Department HUD enforces Fair Housing Act. So.
But does, I mean, how does that affect us as a board in passing? And that goes to the question, what are our housing codes? If our, is that why the wording is, like for the fire, we recommend? Is it because we actually don't have a housing code for Story County concerning something?
We have a zoning code.
Okay.
And in regards to enforcement of this conditional use permit and the conditions,
yes,
the Planning and Development Department does that. You could certainly make a condition that we do annual inspections as well, or however many you see fit, but we enforce those conditions of the department. Yes.
Okay, and that's what I'm wanting to make sure of, is that because it's not in town, it's not in Nevada, it's not in whatever, that the Story County rules and regulations do apply, and we are allowed to enforce them.
And if there are changes in the use, you know, there's processes for amending conditional use permits. I'm sure you've had modifications come before you if it was something major like that.
Okay.
Ms. Youngberg, if I might, the low income, the sort of federal low income housing that we all think about when we hear low income housing is a whole process unto itself. I represent multiple clients that offer low income housing. There are processes that not only the landlord has to go through to be compliant with federal law, but also that the applicant tenant has to continuously be in compliance with. The one client I have who has three buildings, a total of something like 36 units, has two full-time people assisting him just with that paperwork. It's not something that you would undertake as someone rented out for 14 dormitory-style residences. So your question, though, it would not impact the county's ability to regulate, to otherwise regulate. There is nothing within the county code that would be preempted, I should say, by any of the low-income standards that I'm familiar with in terms of certifying to the federal government that in any of the low-income projects that I've been involved with. There's all sorts of public assistance programs that are available to tenants, but that's anybody can apply for those. It doesn't need to be low-income housing under the auspices of the Department of Justice or the, you know, or HUD or anything like that. It's a totally separate issue. But even there, nothing would stop the county from enforcing the code of ordinances. And if the facts changed, as Amelia pointed out, the conditional use permit, first of all, if it's not followed, is going to be rescinded or revoked. And second of all, if things do change, there's always the possibility for modification. Now, I always hate to tell people to agree to something with the thought that it's going to be modified in the future, but I think to your concern is, are we going to be able to regulate this as a county if it becomes low-income housing or affordable housing, however you want to define it, wherein the federal government is involved in some assistance? And I don't represent the county. You need to speak with Jessica Reynolds about any actual legal opinion on that. But my opinion, I would submit to you, is the county would not be prevented from enforcing its land use regulations or anything in its code of ordinances.
Okay.
That's your question, Karen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. With that,
I've been involved in low-rent housing in my rentals in Des Moines, and I can assure you we are not going to get involved in that program. The paperwork and the regulations are killers.
Thank you, Bill. I'd like to close it now so the board can deliberate. I think we've heard from everyone. We've heard a lot of different opinions, sort of thing. You know, as I sit here and I listen to them all, I boil them down to a couple of things. And the first one that I see, I know our directors or our department has looked at it. I truly question the compatibility. You know, as I look back on this, and I've been involved in some things in the past at different times, the compatibility is, and I've been reading back and forth, I have paid attention to you, Mr. Holland, trust me. But I keep stumbling over that compatibility issue. It's really the rest of it, the fire things, you can throw enough money at it, you can fix it. You throw the traffic part of it, yeah, I think there's a, if you live on a gravel road, I've got some empathy on that because I do that. But the compatibility, you're putting a dormitory in a small rural setting. And I really question if that meets the compatibility requirement. That's the one I'm really stumbling on. You know, the other thing is there is something to be said, Mr. Holland, as far as action in the future. Action that we take here could affect what happens in the future. The way it's interpreted. And I'm not an attorney. I've got several that are my friends or enemies, depending on how you look at it. So that's another area that I'm struggling with. And I, you know, we talk about them being college students. I'm not sure you can discriminate to that level when it comes to rental and to housing. So those are the three issues, I guess. Really, the compatibility is a big one, and the other two kind of click in there. Any other comments on the board?
Sure.
If you want to,
I'm just curious with the idea of you doing the 14, and let's not say who it's going to go to, but is there a reason you didn't turn it into like maybe a four-person apartment, like, you know, two people on each floor for, and collecting rent? I understand your desire and need to collect income. Is there a reason that you didn't go maybe towards more a smaller density versus the 14 rooms?
I guess I need to go with that because of the cost that it would be for right now.
Okay.
And right now, the way the school was remodeled, I believe that it suits itself well for this.
Okay.
That's my opinion. I wish you could come out and see it. It might change, you know, you might understand why I chose this way.
Thank you.
Okay. So what's the board going to do?
By the way, I would add, I want to thank all of you for your comments. Obviously, I've been by the school. You've done a great job with it, no doubt, over the years. So I will say that also. We have four options. One question I have. If we reject the CUP this evening, can they rework it and bring it back again? Bring another one back? Another request?
We can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Either through rejecting it, option three, or remanding it with specific modifications for the applicant or staff to place on another agenda in the future.
I just think it needs further review and modifications, and I don't know if the fourth one is what would best work between the two parties. I'm not saying I'm rejecting it at this point, but I'm saying I might want to have some further discussion and some clarification on some issues.
Sure. I can go through the alternatives again really quickly. So the first one is approval. The second one is approval with conditions. The third one is denial. And then the fourth one is the remanding the conditional use permit back to staff and the applicant for further reviews and modifications and directing us to place this item on the August 16th agenda or future.
So that describes.
So those are your options.
I would. The question I'd have for you is, what would you like the staff to look into? That would be one of the directions. So I've got some direction.
I'm very concerned about the definition of multifamily dwelling and the legality of if that stays in there. There were a couple other things. Well, then, going back to recommend, use the word recommend versus, I'm sorry, require versus recommend. I mean, I think there's just some technicalities of, I don't know if we have the right to change those or not, but that's what they're for. So I just want to cover the basis for the citizens that if there's a situation that arises, that there's no legal issue of what the county has the right to do and what the county doesn't have the right to do. And I know when you say conditions, well, you know what, you can get tied up in court a lot under some of those for under that.
So on the multifamily definition question, you know, this is something that
more than one.
This is something that we thought of, a lot about.
Okay.
So we have a couple different definitions. I guess I would say first off that the conditional use chapter, the code, what it says in terms of adaptive reuse.
Okay.
It'll permit the adaptive reuse of abandoned schools, churches, or other institutional, commercial, or industrial buildings where a proposed use or proposed combination of two or more principal uses on one lot within one building is not otherwise permitted. That's what the conditional use permit is for. And so multifamily, we have definitions of a boarding house, we have definitions of a group home, and so multifamily seems to be the most succinct. But the actual adaptive reuse section of the code is pretty. That actual adaptive reuse, that permit, that conditional use permit for adaptive reuse is pretty
from that. There's no specific detailed
standard
to that.
Well, is this something that
standards of approval.
Right.
My question's answered, which is why I guidance.
1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
I guess my suggestion at this point in time was we reject the CUP as long as if they want to change some things, they want to reduce some things, they can bring it back. Like I said, I'm still wrestling with compatibility. Mm-hmm. I truly question if that's compatible with the with where we are out there. That's up to the board.
I'll move to recommend we do number 3.
Okay. Is that a motion?
A motion, sorry. I move.
We hear a second.
Mm-hmm. I'm moving for number 3.
Well,
the motion for number 3. Basically, it denies it as it is. But that doesn't mean they can't go back.
Sure. So condition 3 is deny the conditional use permit for the adaptive reuse of the Shipley School.
As
put forth in the case. CUP 07-17 as submitted.
So if I understand the difference between 3 and 4, 3 pretty much throws it out, and 4 says, let's take another look at it and see if we want to pursue.
Mm-hmm. So I think what Karen, what your question was earlier, was yes, they can reapply. And 3, a motion on 3 would make them reapply completely.
Okay. So what's the difference between 3 and 4?
And 4 is remanding it to a future meeting and giving us other things to consider when we bring it back to you. And so it's not a complete reapplication on the applicant's part.
Right. Okay.
So you said there would be specific things that you would want staff or the applicant
right.
to look at.
Right. So I need to go to 4 then, because not everything needs to be redone.
I think you could, like, it's up to you, but
okay. Sorry.
So,
my question is, though, you need to give direction to the staff on what we need to change if we're going to, in essence, table it, is what we're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know.
I'm going to rescind motion number 3.
And that's fine. You just need to give them some direction on what to look for.
Yeah. I would like to make a motion for number 4, please.
I would second that.
Motion and second. All in favor? Roll call vote.
Youngberg.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye.
Brecky.
Aye. Okay, now like I said, I would recommend you give the staff what we need to look at, and we will send this back and they can bring it back.
Is that something that will be publicly stated, or because I guess I'm kind of somewhat unclear as to what specifically we're to look at.
Yeah.
Can we direct you to, I don't know if this is legal, can we direct you to speak with the owner, as in to, are they willing to modify the number of people coming in? I mean, I know it's more of a burden financially, but would that be an option to the other party? I don't know. If they don't have any interest in that, that's fine. But I guess the and I agree with our president of the board. I am questioning the compatibility of that many people, and I don't feel that they are going to get these students. I can be wrong. But I'm also in the rental business, so you just never know who you are going to end up with. So I don't want it to be sold as a bill of goods to the community as student housing, because nobody can guarantee that, and the probability and statistics of all that might be against them.
Okay.
But that would take a study.
Please, Board, I understand the Board is represented by a council, and I've made note of that earlier, but the applicant would be willing to consider modification as to density. It seems to me that Mr. McGill's concerns with compatibility does have to do with density.
Yes.
And it sounds like Ms. Youngberg's concerns echo Mr. McGill's concerns as to density. Jerry can, again, I'm going to defer to him in terms of what they require. And again, I understand County Attorney Reynolds is your counsel, but as far as the applicant goes, we'd be willing to reconsider compatibility as it concerns the density concerns, if I may stumble, that the board seems to have with the submission. Mm-hmm.
To give you an idea that the first conditional use permit that was approved in 2001 was for 16 units. This application is for 14 people, 14 rooms.
Different board here too, Jerry.
I'm just throwing out that as being a fact.
That was the second conditional use permit.
Well, it's all about, it. You know, we can all dream about what we want it to be, but it's about the dollars and cents, people, and that's why we have to look at this logically.
Board, maybe I get a notification early enough so we can be here at the next meeting. And are we just taking a little magic marker right out and just going over two or three things? Are we going to really dramatically redo this thing? Do you have any guidance on that?
So far, I heard density, and that's the only thing that I know that we're supposed to be working on.
Yeah, you know, traffic has been brought up several times, and I stand with Mr. Holland on that issue until there is known factors, and I mean, let's just face it, the area in general is becoming more populated, and traffic is more. Lots of families have three cars instead of one, so we're not arguing whether there's going to be more traffic or not. We have to follow what is actually in print as code and work with, as he said, compatibility is a viable thing, that a viable issue that we can converse about. Mm-hmm. So,
Randy, what also you mentioned, what would you like the board also to look at?
Well, I'm not sure how, I wasn't sure how this was going to go, but I know Cap had mentioned a couple of concerns earlier that he may have wanted perhaps some of them to implement. I don't know if you're still interested in bringing those.
Well, I'm just still worried about some of the wording so that everything is copacetic with what we're trying to accommodate. Trying to achieve in making sure, you know, the restrictions that go with owning a property or compliances, I should say. but you know, I just want to make sure that that the county does its due diligence in making sure that this place is going to be compliant to safety and rules and regulations of the county housing.
My concern about compatibility is that I'm looking at a more urban setting going into a rural setting. It was suggested, and I've read the history, original bed and breakfast permit will come, go. That's a little different setting. I've got empathy for you on the structure of the building as far as changing it. It's probably all concrete and brick and that sort of thing. So to go in and change that, I know how some of these other schoolhouses have changed, and I know how much, got a basic idea on how much it costs to change those things. But that type of an environment seems to fit more in the rural setting that the Shipley School is located in. And again, that's just an opinion, but you look compatible and you look, will it fit with the people? Will it fit with, you know, they talk about the structure. The structure is part of it, but will it fit with the people in the environment? That's why I'm stumbling on compatibility.
And I think I would reiterate that in regards to the definition as Shipley being a rural village. Maybe something that can be.
And I agree with that.
exciting. But I would also agree with Karen here that there's many of the concerns that we've heard tonight we don't really have a lot of control over, because it does meet the criteria. I mean, you've seen the massive pages of research and support that other committees have put into this to bring it to this point, and for that I'm grateful. I think they're doing a very good job.
See, we're going a little more direction.
I think that helps.
Okay.
All right. Just for a point of clarification, we have basically remanded this to our next meeting in August.
August 16th.
Okay. So be it. I don't know, asking Mr. Lloyd's question, will there be notification go out again, Jerry?
Normally trying to get notices out at least a week before the meeting, and our requirement is a quarter mile from the property.
Okay. And well, everybody that's here goes unnoticed. It'll be here next month.
And I assume any changes that are made will be sent to us, obviously, ahead of time, and that you'll be
staff report.
Meeting.
Yeah. Okay. Which will be made available on the county's website.
Okay, great.
All right. Moving on. Any other business here to come before the board? Staff comments? Jerry,
thank you, everyone. Do you own any rental property?
I have had
stuff to do. I would love to have a single professional. Or married professional, and you know how many times I get that? And that was my, and because of how regulation it means, that's why I kept going back. So it's very different. And I appreciate that. So it's something that I really totally agree with. No, I'm also.
Yeah. I foreclosed. So.
You know, or making it into apartments. That because if you do that, you don't have the density issue, which means you do have fewer problems.
Yeah.
You never know.
Like renovating, starting.
Thank you.
2 weeks ago, 1/2 of my friends still bought.
Okay.
Okay.
You should sell.
Any other business? Yeah, I just wanted to tell you that YSS appeal scheduled for the 10th was deferred until August 14th. And I was going to just give you kind of an update, just a real brief update of kind of some activity.
That's
all right. I was just going to show you 3 or 3 slides.
It's freezing.
Talk about nine girls. Freezing to death.
This is part of the report that we gave to the board supervisors. We give quarterly reports. And this is for the second quarter, and it compares the last 2 years' second quarters. So on the left-hand side is the 2017 second quarter. So overall, total number of zoning permits. Again, we don't have a building code, so we do those zoning permit applications. We're up by 1 from the previous year's second quarter, up by quite a few from the 2015 valuation, up by $2.8 million. Again, this is the value of the proposed project, and then a little over $3 million from 2015, which is a good thing. Dwellings are in blue, and then other permits in red includes commercial uses, industrial uses. And then this is kind of a smorgasbord of activities, including development cases, CUPs, similar to what you reviewed tonight in red, subdivisions, green, rezonings, what else do we have? Site development plans. And again, the overall activity is up from the previous 2 years. And this is probably the last thing I want to show you. We call it the dot map. It shows you conditional uses, commercial, zoning permits, dwellings, other permits, which can include fence, deck, and then subdivisions are in red. So what's neat about it is, you know, you see the development activity around areas where you would expect, around Ames and Nevada, but you're also seeing some activity beyond the beyond those two cities. I think we've had, three residential subdivisions that are shown in red. But it's kind of interesting to see that we've got things going on in other townships other than the two more densely populated areas. So those are the things I just want to show you. We're growing, things are changing, as we're experiencing tonight. So I'd be happy to answer any questions about any of that. And again, I'll let you know more as things unfold on the YSS. So if you...
Okay. Sounds good.
I wasn't ever at that initial meeting, so I haven't gotten any contact from any attorneys or anything. They probably
fellows have their pretty much contacts going through the outside firm.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's two attorneys representing that case, Hoffner and Hoover.
All right. Meeting adjourned?
And I'll collect those.
Motion to adjourn. Second.